The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.
In 1887, the first law establishing the CPA designation was enacted. Hi, I'm Scott Cheslewitz, CPA and partner of the firm Rothenberg & Peters. For decades, our firm has represented individuals, corporations, partnerships, as well as estates and trusts successfully through the maze of the ever-changing tax laws. Please contact us at RothenbergPeters.com. That's RothenbergPeters.com or call 516-773-3200. The tax return should be the culmination of proper tax planning from the previous year. In 1887, I do not think CPAs could have predicted the complexity of tax laws today. Tax planning is the first step to a well-prepared tax scenario. Please feel free to contact us for a comprehensive tax review. Visit RothenbergPeters.com. That's RothenbergPeters.com or call 516-773-3200 for an immediate appointment. Hello, everybody. This is Scott Cheslewitz back again with another round of Tax Talk. I bring taxes to you and tips every week, but I also bring on special guests. Right now, you probably had enough of taxes, and I never get enough of that. The bottom line is, it's important for you to not only focus on taxes, which you have to do now, the deadline is looming, but to focus on multiple things. And today, I have with me Cheryl Cacerotto. She is a senior associate at Kohner Elder Law. She devotes her practice primarily to trusts and estates, estate and asset protection planning, probate, and probate in the state administration. Now, Cheryl is not only an excellent attorney, but a wonderful person, and that's why I have her on a show. I only bring on good people. Let me tell you how to reach me. You can visit my website, my company website, at www.rothenbergpeters.com, 516-773-3200. You know I'm a CPA. Cheryl, glad to have you aboard.
Scott, thank you for having me. The feeling is mutual. Not only are you fantastic at what you do professionally, but as a person, it really doesn't get better than you. Thanks for the intro. So to reach me, my number is 631-390-5000, and our website is www.konaelderlaw.com. And Kona is spelled C as in cat, O, N as in Nancy, A as in apple, elderlaw.com. Thanks, Scott.
You're very welcome, Cheryl, and nobody could see it, but I'm blushing. and I appreciate the compliment. So, Cheryl, you know, this is a very important area that people don't focus on in terms of planning their estate or Medicaid planning, and they don't coordinate their beneficiaries and their life insurance policies with their beneficiaries and their will. But I want to get into first, you want to do a shout out, I understand. So let's do that first.
Yeah, well, April is not only an important month for you because it's tax season. April 16th is actually National Healthcare Decisions Day, and that day was started in 2008. And the reason why that day is so important is it brings awareness to advanced directives and the significance of starting conversations with your loved ones about advanced directives. So what is that? What is an advanced directive? It is your healthcare proxy, your living will, your power of attorney. Questions that you should be asking yourselves are, who is going to make healthcare decisions for me? Are my end-of-life decisions known? Do I have somebody that I can trust to make these decisions for me? And do they know what I actually want? So my law firm is actually hosting an event to provide free consultations to all callers concerning their advanced directives in light of National Healthcare Decisions Day. And again, I can be reached at 631-390-5000. So I would urge our listeners to just hone in on their advanced directives to ensure that everything is in order.
I absolutely agree with that. And how often should people revisit their advanced directives if, in fact, they have started something in place?
What I tell my clients is, you know, anytime you have a big life event, so for example, you get married, you get divorced, you have children, you become a widow, And if you don't have a big life event, it makes sense to meet with an attorney or at least review your documents yourself every 5 to 7 years, because it's amazing how much life can change in such a short period of time. And then you take a step back and you look and you go, wow, I don't even trust my sister anymore. That's the last person I want making my medical decisions.
Exactly.
So it's important to make sure that what's in writing actually matches what's in your mind and heart.
Yeah, and you know, Cheryl, with the constant threats of changing the lifetime exclusion as far as estates are concerned, people need to probably call you as often as possible whenever a bill becomes law and it affects their estate planning. I want to get into some things. What does a trust estates litigation attorney do?
So a trust and estates litigation attorney is a little bit different than just a regular trust and estates attorney. You know, there's estate planning, there's Medicaid planning, there's all aspects of elder law. But there's a whole other area of law that's part of trust and estates, but it's what I consider, you know, the fun part of trust and estates. So what does a trust and estates litigation attorney do? The way I like to describe it is I, as a trust and estates litigation attorney, assist my clients through probably one of the most difficult times in their life. It means that they lost a loved one, someone passed away, and now they're in a dispute with somebody else over the assets of that deceased person. Mm-hmm. So I represent clients in disputes relating to wills, to trust, to estates,
right.
Fiduciary litigation. So that's like an executor and a trustee that a beneficiary feels is doing the wrong thing. So that's in sum what a trust and estate litigation attorney does.
Now, Cheryl, there are times when people don't even know the wrong thing is occurring. And, you know, they should probably seek counsel just to make sure everything is on the up and up. That's my own experience in the past with some clients. And it could be very smart people also, very trusting. Oh, they're handling it. Everything will be okay. Do you agree that the people should reach out anyway and just, you know, have somebody take another look at the situation?
Definitely. I mean, this is especially important in elder cases, elder abuse cases. I have all the time where a woman comes in and says, oh, I want a will to give, you know, my nephew everything. He's been taking care of me. And I delve in a little bit, and then I see that the nephew's been, you know, stealing his aunt's funds for a decade, and she has no idea. And she thinks everything's being done properly because he's family. She trusts him. She would never think he would do that to her. So having somebody that isn't emotionally invested in your case, just take a step back and review what's actually happening in your life, is incredibly invaluable
right.
for some clients.
Right. You know, I try not to live my personal life this way, but I've noticed in business when we were doing forensic accounting, we stopped doing that. But the word con, I've heard this before, emanates from the word confidence. And people need to have their eyes open, Cheryl, because sometimes, you know, people feel entitled or people have opportunity and they turn on the ones that are trusting them. So it's good that they have a friendly voice to speak to, someone like yourself who is extremely knowledgeable. And we don't try to stir the pot. We just try to indicate what's going on and let people make their decisions after that, correct?
That's correct. The last thing that I ever want to do is stir a pot that doesn't need to be stirred in a family. But doing your diligence and making sure that you, as my client, is making an educated decision, that's all I want to do. And if that includes, you know, bringing in the third party, your family member, your friend, into a meeting with us to discuss your life and what's going on, we're happy to do that. We do that all the time.
Right. So someone passes away, they do not have a will or a trust. Tell us what goes on then.
Oh, wow. It's a great question. So having a valid will or a trust is, you know, incredibly important. And the reason being, you know, your assets, if you want them distributed to a specific person when you pass away, there are only a few ways you can do that. One, you have to have them listed as a beneficiary on that asset or a joint owner on that asset, or you need to have a valid will or a trust. So, for example, if you own real property, typically you wouldn't own real property as a joint owner with another individual. You would give the individual the real property through a will or a trust once you pass away. So what happens if you don't have a will or a trust and you don't have them listed as a beneficiary or a joint owner?
Cheryl, I want to interrupt you for a minute. We're going to come back and tell people what a valid will is, and we're going to discuss further that question that I raised if you don't have a will or a trust. This is Scott Cheslow at CPA. You can reach me at www.rothenbergpeters.com, 516-773-3200. Cheryl, real quick, how can he reach you again?
631-390-5000.
Oh, that's great, Cheryl. And we're going to be back in a few moments, people, and we're going to continue this very important conversation with Cheryl Cazzarato. Hold on. Scott Cheslowitz back with Cheryl Cazzarato, who is a wonderful trust and estates litigation attorney. Cheryl, I want to get back to the conversation we were having about what if somebody dies without a will or a trust. Can you please continue explaining to our audience the processes?
I'd be happy to. So if you pass away without a will or a trust, and your asset is solely owned by you when you pass away, what happens is it's going to go through New York State intestate statute, it's called. What does this mean? So let's say you have a spouse and three minor kids, okay, and you have no will, and your spouse isn't listed as a joint owner or a beneficiary. What that means, pursuant to New York State law, is your spouse is only going to get half of your assets, and your minor kids are going to get the other half of your assets. So, of course, the last thing you would want are half your assets being distributed to your three minor kids that don't have the capacity to even manage those assets. So that's one example why planning is so important. The way it works is you have to follow New York State law as to how the distributions are made. Where if you have a will or a trust, it's going to overpower whatever the intestate statute, whatever the New York State law is, and you will have the ability to dictate exactly where you want your assets to go. So in that example, you would probably put your assets in a trust for your kids, or you'd give all your assets to your spouse to manage them for the well-being of your children. You would never pick to give half of your assets to three minor children. And that's one example why having a valid will or a trust is so important.
It is, Cheryl, of course. But one thing I've seen that people are somewhat misaligned. They may have a will, and they may not change the beneficiaries on their retirement plans, on their life insurance policies, and then things get a little murky, unintended consequences take place. You want to go into that a little bit?
I'd be happy to. That's why it's very important, as I said earlier, to really look at your estate plan every 5 years or so, or every time you make a major life change. Exactly your example. I had in a case where a decedent, a person who recently passed, had his sister listed as a beneficiary of his IRA, but he was married right before he passed away, and he left all his assets to his wife through his will. Yeah. The IRA beneficiary is completely different from your will. Your will, again, only controls assets in your name alone without a beneficiary or a joint owner when you pass away. So in that case, the wife didn't get the IRA policy because she was not listed as a beneficiary, and the will didn't specifically state, I am revoking that IRA policy beneficiary form and giving it to my wife. So the wife was out of luck there, and he probably didn't even know he did it. That's why it's really important to make sure your estate plan is aligned.
You know, and I must say, people also, who the beneficiaries of your retirement plans are uber important these days with the new 10-year rule with reference to the required minimum distribution law under the SECURE Act. So with there are certain exceptions to that, but whatever's in the retirement plan needs to be drawn down in 10 years. And if it's sizable assets, it means there's going to be sizable taxes. So if there is a taxable estate, you'll be fortunate enough to have that, you'll get an estate tax deduction when the individual takes the money out. But you have to know the laws and you have to speak to your professionals all the time. Cheryl, let's talk about something here. Can someone legally disinherit a family member?
Well, yes and no. It depends on the family member. So it's interesting. In New York State, you legally cannot disinherit your spouse. You could hate your spouse. You could live apart from your spouse. But unless you have some kind of prenuptial, postnuptial separation agreement, you can't disinherit the spouse. They're entitled to a share of your estate regardless of what your will says. You can, however, disinherit a child, a parent, a cousin, an aunt, or an uncle. And again, that's why having a will or a trust is so important, because if you want to disinherit a child, for example, you need a will or a trust to do that, because if any of your assets pass through the intestacy statute, like my example earlier, mm-hmm. your kid is going to inherit a part of your estate, whether you want them to or not. Right. So it depends on the family member, Scott.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, you might have the most wonderful children, but they are children. They're going to want the fancy new car. They may end up, you know, being overzealous with their spending habits, develop creditor issues. You know, I believe that over time, and maybe you disagree, Cheryl, that's when money should be doled out, riches should be doled out to the children. But, you know, you don't always see that. People don't address their situations currently. They only address them when it's a problem. And, well, Cheryl, what do you think about that?
I think that's what keeps me in business. If everybody did proper planning mm-hmm. with an attorney and a professional that knows what they're doing, I probably wouldn't have much of a job as a trust and estate litigation attorney.
You know, Cheryl, I like you a lot, but come on, people, let's put Cheryl out of business.
Well, I'm always going to be needed when an executor or a trustee isn't doing what they should be doing. But if you want to disinherit a family member and you meet with somebody that knows what they're doing, you know, it's very difficult to overturn documents. Contest the validity of those.
You know, Cheryl, I know you'd be in business anyway, just with the advanced planning and keeping up with the ever-changing laws and modifications that have to be made.
Exactly.
So what's the difference between a revocable trust and a will, please?
Oh, sure. So a revocable trust is kind of like a contract where it's valid immediately upon signing. Mm-hmm. And the person signing it needs a higher capacity than they would if they were just signing a will. How I describe a will is it's really just a piece of paper until a judge says it's valid. Where a trust, you don't need a judge involved at all. It's immediately valid. So back to, you know, disinheriting family members. Mm-hmm. By doing it through a will, you're almost inviting a proceeding for somebody to contest it. But if you do it in a trust, you know, you don't even have a court involved at that point. So that's why, you know, a trust and estate litigator, it's important to use them in estate planning matters before you pass away mm-hmm. to ensure that there won't be a fight at the end of the day among your family members.
But, you know, when you speak...
It's very important.
Oh, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but when you speak about capacity, you know, they put a trust document in front of somebody, and that somebody brings in two friends to witness. And, you know, you don't really know what's going on in the person's head. So when you have a situation like that, you know, it's pretty difficult to fight the trust, isn't it?
It is. You know, when I meet with a potential client, I make sure I'm meeting with them alone, with no family members around. Mm-hmm. I bring my own witnesses. I make sure they know their assets. Right. I make sure they know their family tree. there are various ways to determine, you know, mental capacity.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, you know, we're talking about contesting estate planning documents there, and it happens all the time, right, Cheryl? I mean, you're in business, and there's a lot of times where people are hoodwinked into signing something, and they may not be of the ripe capacity or even know what they're signing because of it. You agree?
Oh, yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. So I've literally worked on, probably at this point in my career, hundreds upon hundreds of trust and estate litigation cases, some larger than others, some settle outside of the court, some settle in court, some I win. But lack of capacity is a subject that comes up frequently.
Yeah,
I think we're taking a break.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to get to some examples in your life experiences, Cheryl, with estate litigation, but we're out of time. Scott Cheslewitz at www.rothenbergpeters.com, 516-773-3200. Get your taxes done, everybody. Cheryl, how can they reach you?
631-390-5000.
And at website?
KonaElderLaw.com.
All right, Cheryl, thank you for being here. Bye, everybody.
Thank you, Scott.
The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.